welcome along to Rugby Pass Short Ball. It's Scotty Stevenson and Mills Moliaina with you as always. Good morning, Mills.
Good morning, Sumo.
I don't know whether to go back or look forward or maybe a bit of both today on the pod. We probably need to discuss a few things we haven't had a chance to catch up on. First of all, you think they're still dining out on Ireland's win in the Six Nations? Is that a rhetorical question?
How funny was it that she fell on bloody St. Paddy's Day too, wasn't it?
Hey? So that's the greatest thing of all time, right? An Irish victory against England on St. Patrick's Day. You couldn't hope for more. A lot of people, there's a lot of soul-searching. There's a lot of talk about Eddie Jones because I think we've talked about it before on this podcast. There's always a risk when you are such a dominant personality, when you have such a big ego, that it's all about you and not about your rugby team. And even in the wake of that defeat, there's been not much chat about the rugby team. It's been about, has Eddie Jones come to the end of the road here? What do you think about, first of all, England's fifth place in the Six Nations, their worst in an extraordinarily long time, and secondly, about Eddie Jones and the way he set himself up here, because he has set himself up to fail by being the dominant personality in the team?
Yeah, I mean, what a difference a year makes, doesn't it? I mean, he's come in, changed a whole heap of stuff, was pretty dominant, and we were sitting here thinking, you know, when is it the All Blacks' turn to play them, the two best teams in the world, and all of a sudden...
All of a sudden you're a curtain raiser to the Irish test, right? The thing about it, to me, I mean, I think the England game against the All Blacks is still going to be the most anticipated test of this tour for any number of reasons, but basically because this game can be boiled down to Steve Hansen against Eddie Jones. It concerns me that it's become a coaching battle and not a team battle, and I think that has an impact on the team because these guys aren't silly. They've been around a long time. They're watching all the subtext and the byplay here, and this really is. It has been for a while. It's been an obsession for both coaches, I think.
Oh, it's been brewing for a wee while. The question is now, okay, let's just say, and I don't think this is going to happen, the All Blacks play England, England win. Would this save Eddie Jones? Is this what he needs?
Well, it's probably become more imperative for him now, right, after this finish in the Six Nations. And the Six Nations is an annual contest. England last played New Zealand when? 700 years ago, a long time ago. So I don't know if the one-off will assuage all the concerns around Eddie Jones, but certainly he's pitched it. He wants the game. He wants to prove that he's the best team in the world. The only way you do that is by beating the number one team in the world, which happens to be the All Blacks at the moment. So, yeah, I guess there's still all of that riding on it. But does he become more circumspect, or does Eddie Jones now double down and become an even bigger personality, an even bigger mouth?
Well, the thing is, that's one of his, I suppose, strengths, is that when he's down, he actually comes back fighting. And so he uses that to his advantage. I'm not too sure what's really going on because he hasn't really lost too many personnel in that camp. So perhaps guys are a little bit, I suppose, sick of what he's, you know, how strong of a personality he has become. You know, you talk about things like the texting and things like that and trying to control his players in that sort of sense. So it's just, I mean, to go back to my point, I think that's one of his strengths, that he comes out fighting and uses his lips to do that.
Yeah, well, I mean, they do have some injury concerns. We know that. We'll wait till June now until we see international rugby back on the menu from an England point of view. They've got a tour of South Africa. It's going to be a major test for the South Africans as well, because we've talked about it at length on this podcast over the time about where they're at internationally. You know, England would fancy themselves going there in a three-test series and winning that series at least. Do you think that what would really dent Eddie Jones is to lose that series in South Africa against a Springbok side that hasn't been anywhere near its best over the last 3 or 4 years?
Well, the South African team also, they've got a lot to prove. New coaching setup. You know, you're sort of seeing glimpses of a different sort of game plan within their whole super teams. And so, if anything, I mean, it's probably more dangerous that they're actually getting South Africa in this sense, as it is for England. So if they do go over there and lose, man, there's going to be some pressure on them.
Yeah, there is. So, I mean, he signed up. He was almost given the Kim Jong-un title for life for a while there.
What's he got left? Like 10 years?
Pretty much, right? It's a mega deal. So you got to be careful what you wish for. A lot of the headlines last week, of course, were about comments Eddie Jones had made at various functions about various countries. Do you see any problem with that? I mean, it's all a bit of gamesmanship and a bit of humour. What's more concerning for me? I mean, the guy's talking at a private function. I know that he's representing a team and he has a role to fulfil and a responsibility to that role, but, you know, you won't get these guys talking at functions and using throwaway lines and making jokes because they'll be too scared that it'll all be spread across the front page of the tabloids the next day. But, you know, I go back to that point. I just wonder from here whether Eddie Jones really ramps it up heading into that South African series and obviously with an eye still on November. Yeah, the All Blacks are concerned about England. They know that. Steve Hansen does not want to lose this game.
No. And I think, you know, from all that's coming out of the All Black camps while they're doing their health camps, they're actually sort of setting up preparation for, you know, the Rugby World Cup. So a lot of the things that they're looking at trying to implement on the India tour is an actual, I suppose, rehearsal for that 2019. Of course you don't want to lose. And they know how big a stage it is over there. He's lost to England before. But, yeah, it would be a bit of a sort of step. Well, I wouldn't say a step backwards for Steve Hansen. Yeah, it would hurt him, but I think he's got a bigger picture in mind, right?
Yeah, well, he's got to have a bigger picture in mind. It's just on that. Welcome along to the Short Ball, everyone. If you're just joining us for this episode, Mills Mulliani and Scotty Stevenson with you each week, talking issues all New Zealand rugby. Speaking of the All Blacks, I mean, did you think that perhaps through last season there was a predictability about the All Blacks' play that they are going to need to change a few things this year if they want to maintain their place at the top of the heap?
Oh, I think possibly. I think there was also an aspect of he threw a lot of players in there that got a taste of All Black rugby and what it was going to be about, and you know, to look into the future. So, but I think, you know, they won't want to reinvent the wheel too much, but they would want to sort of touch on a few aspects of their game that they didn't get quite right.
They had the first camp Monday, right? Last Monday, and I think 19 players. What's intriguing for me is Richie Mwanga is currently out injured. Baden Barrett's your number one first five. Damien McKenzie's only played one game at first five because of injuries at the Chiefs, so Tiaan Falcons had to deputise there. Lima Sopoanga wasn't invited to that camp.
Mm.
And I spoke to Limar after the Highlanders' victory over the Crusaders and you know, just about him and the way he looks at the moment. He looks very calm, very relaxed. And he said, oh, you know, I've made my peace. You know, I knew when I signed the deal to go at the end of the year that I was handing in my All Blacks jersey.
Yeah.
But I think back to the Tawhata Kerbalo situation where he was picked right up until he left.
Yeah.
Are the All Blacks maybe tempted to keep Limar Sopoanga in the mix? And if you don't want to hypothesise on what they're thinking, what would you do if you were in the same position? Would you keep Limar Sopoanga on the hook, certainly through June and right up until he goes?
Oh, well, the thing is, you know, once he's – I thought they would have, given TKB, you know, the fact that they hung on to him right through until he needed to go.
Yeah.
But you're now in a sort of situation where perhaps they thought, you know, Mwanga would just step into that role. He's now injured, which is probably, you know, stirred things up a little bit.
Sure.
Sopoanga's playing some good footy, you know, as is the Highlanders. And so you know, if it was me, I'd keep him in there.
You know, yeah, you would.
As your third option.
Yep.
And given the injuries that are happening at the moment with Mwanga, because he'd probably be the next one off the cab, next cab off the rank.
Sure.
And keep him here and keep that sort of going. I mean, between Sopoanga, Mwanga, I mean, possibly Barrett, Geordie Barrett, I don't know whether he's slotting in there, or Damien McKenzie. I mean, he hasn't played a lot of rugby, so perhaps the All Blacks feel that they've got, you know, the 10 sort of covered without having Sopoanga in there.
It's brave.
It is very brave.
Especially given the injury rate, I just think you wouldn't want to shut that door permanently, would you?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I'm not too sure about the communication he's had with the coaches. Perhaps that door still is open. Mm. You know, let's just say McKenzie goes down. You know, that door, that health camp that he might get.
Come on down, Lima Sopoanga. Yeah, exactly. Come on down. Let's stay with Super Rugby because we're still a wee way off test matches in this part of the world. The Highlanders-Crusaders game, I think it lived up to its billing. Millsy, speaking of St. Patrick's Day, shit, there were some ropey people walking around the middle of Dunners during the day.
You would have had a great time down there.
No, I didn't go out. I was too scared. It's kicking off like downtown Baghdad. But a great crowd, a boisterous crowd. We were talking about the game last week. I think it has firmed now as the game, right? Yep. The rivalry in the comp.
Yeah.
Although we get to look forward this week to the Hurricanes coming off a bye week and Beauden Barrett's engagement party to face the Highlanders at the Cacton. This is the first time the Highlanders would have been away from home this season.
Yeah.
They're up against a team that'll be pretty fresh after a bye, and I think the jury's still out whether that's a good or bad thing. But this game, I said last week, foolishly, that no game will ever beat Crusaders Highlanders game this year. I suspect I'll be proved wrong this weekend. This game is so good. It should be a sellout at Westpac. It's got to be.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, given the way both teams have sort of travelled, the beating the Crusaders, who we're sitting here a couple of weeks ago thinking, man, there's nothing that these guys, you know, they're not fazed by anything. Great. Now they're two losses in a row. You know, the Hurricanes have come off a bye. You know, they'll be really fresh, you know. And, you know, you've seen the way the Highlanders came back from their bye. They're a little bit sort of rusty in that first 10 or so minutes into Stormers, but then they sort of just took off. So it almost was, you know, refreshing. But this game is going to be huge.
I think about the start the Highlanders made at home against the Crusaders, replicating the start the Hurricanes made at home against the Crusaders. If they both start at that pace on Saturday night, someone's going to die in the opening quarter of the game. It's a ridiculous speed the game's being played at.
Oh, it's fast and physical. You know, it's, you know, and a lot of people say, oh, I actually believe it's a lot faster and more physical than when I was back playing. It's unbelievable.
All those years ago, Melzy.
Yeah, a few years ago. But yeah, it's going to be huge. And so there's, you know, some big battles as well, which I'm looking forward to. I mean, you were just spoken about Sopoanga. Well, look, he's up against the incumbent now, and, you know, Sopoanga's on his way out overseas, so that in itself is awesome.
He'll love this matchup. He'll love playing Beauden Barrett. Here's the thing. The Highlanders, I wrote a column on Rugby Pass this week about the Highlanders, and really it's an attitude column more than anything. 152 tackles a game they're making, and they've got the best tackle percentage in the comp. So the best tackle percentage after making the most tackles per game, that is all attitude. And I don't know what it is about that team, but they all just buy in totally to the culture that is expected in Highlanderland, even to the point where Glenn Delaney, Aaron Major, and Mark Hammett, three Cantabrians who are coaching the team, all finished cracker stubby in the coach's box of James Spate's finest gold medal ale. Is that the most? That's the most Highlanders thing I could think of. The boys cracking a sponsor's product in the coach's box at full time after a victory. I know people think, oh, yeah, whatever, it's just a beer. So, it's the symbolism of it all.
Yeah, yeah.
What they're trying to show is that we're in here full noise, mate. There's nothing Canterbury about us anymore. We're Highlanders.
Yeah.
And everyone on that team feels the same way.
Yeah.
Like Joey Wheeler, he's not even playing. They've got him back to be, I don't know, like the king of morale. It's insane.
Yeah, what is his role?
His role's like, I'm just there to be the up guy. It's so good to do some social media stuff, to do some Highlanders TV stuff, just to be Joey Wheeler. I mean, I love that, right?
That's awesome. That is awesome.
He's not playing. He's not contracted to actually put on the boots. He's just there to be Joey Wheeler. That's so Highlanders to do something like that. It's great.
That's awesome. And it is. It's a reflection of the whole buy-in of the team. And we spoke to Elliot Dixon last week.
Yeah.
You know, about, you know, how, you know, his words were, you know, they're not the most well-known sort of type five, but they sort of love to belt people about. They even belt each other around. And they've been told to sort of calm down a little bit, you know.
Well, he missed a game because he got knocked out in training. Ugh. And that's ridiculous. I love that tied five. Tom Franklin and Jackson Hemipaw, I reckon, are the scariest locking combination in the comp right now.
Yeah.
And it's not because they're great line-out jumpers. They're good. They're good scrummagers. Yep. But it's because they absolutely melt people for an entire game.
Yeah. And, you know, those guys, you know, there's no other expectation. They know what they've got to go out there and do, and they just do it wholeheartedly for their teams. You know, a lot of guys will be going out there trying to do some flashy things. These guys here know what their job is, and they win their lineouts, scrum well, and bout the crap out of the other team.
They're grinders, mate. They're total grinders. And I look back at the Hurricanes against the Crusaders, 23 beaten defenders, so basically forcing 23 missed tackles on the Crusaders. The Highlanders forced 29 missed tackles on them, most of them to Vita Lee, who I don't know what he was on, but man, he must have had six pieces of caffeine gum before that game. 134 metres on your own, and they were tough metres. They were right through the middle of the park. Yeah. There was nothing orthodox about any one of Tevita Lee's runs in that game.
That one off the kickoff. He had to beat how many forwards players did he have to beat?
I know, right?
And then you've got another freak on the other side, and Waisaki Naholo. I mean, far out.
The battle of the wings alone is worth the price of admission. We saw Ben Lamb up against the Crusaders, who backed himself on the outside. We're all watching that game, and with all respect to Ben Lamb, we know how quick he is, but I think it was widely considered that he might have lost his top-end speed. I mean, the guy absolutely skinned David Harvili on the outside. You can't say that happens very often.
Nah, not at all. And I thought, you know, Harvili had the angle on him as well, and he just skinned him for such a big man. Like somebody, I mean, that's the other thing, mate. The wingers, oh, the size of those boys is absolutely incredible. They're massive, and now you're going for it as well.
Well, switch to the Hurricanes in just a moment. One more piece about the Highlanders here. A lot of talk during the week, Mills, has been about Ben Smith's captaincy and whether he influenced any of the decision-making out there. I know it got under the Crusaders' skin because the Highlanders were trying to coach Nick Bryant throughout the game. I spoke to Nick Bryant the morning after, and he knew there was a bit of talk around that Ben Smith had actively influenced the decision to go to the TMO on the Jordan Talfua non-try. And he said, oh, look, I was thinking about it at the time anyway.
Yeah.
But the fact is, Ben Smith, he did cross, I guess, some sort of ethical line standing in the way of a guy trying to take a conversion, getting up in the grill of the referee. Now, I say he crossed some sort of line, but is that good captaincy, or do you want to see this out of the game? Give the guy a chance to take the conversion and just get on with it.
Oh, I mean, I don't know. I think if I was on Ben Smith's team, it's good captaincy.
Yeah, that's right.
I think you've got to ask those questions, and it's just whether you've got a limited sort of time to be able to do that. I mean, whether you stand in front. I mean, you've seen it in I think who was it? Wyn Jones did it over at
100%.
And so, did he cross the line? Well, what other barriers?
Exactly. He's the captain. He's allowed to speak to the referee. Yeah. I think there's just moments in a game, and you've got to take context into account here. I mean, a guy is lining up a conversion. He should be free to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, only the referee should be able to stop play and say, hey, mate, hang on, we're going to have a look at this. But I think Matty Todd would have learned a big lesson from that as well. Mm-hmm. Sam Whitelock would not have let Ben Smith do that.
Oh, no.
And if he had been out on the field, and again, this is no disrespect to Matt Todd. I mean, the guy's so tired because he's running around like a headless triple day tackling people. Sam Whitelock would have marched straight up and said, hey, that's not on.
Yeah.
His ability to influence referees in a really calm and composed way is really crucial to that Crusaders effort. So that's the thing to finish this chat about that particular game. The Crusaders, yes, they've lost two straight, but they've lost two games without Crotty, without Whitelock, two of their best leaders. Two of their calmest heads. Mm-hmm. Once they get those two guys back, I think Crusaders fans will relax a little bit. They'll be back on track. Do you buy into that?
I don't even think the Crusaders fans are that worried, are they?
I doubt it.
I mean, you know, they've lost two in a row. They are probably the team that sort of soaks that up more than any other sort of New Zealand franchise. You know, they've been there before, and they won't be panicking.
Mm.
You're right. Get those leaders back. And they're a totally different team. And you talk about that, you know, even if, you know, Whitelock had sort of gone over to the ref and sort of just made a point of it, at least it's in the referee's head that, you know, okay, yeah, I shouldn't let that happen going forward.
Well, I know Luke Romano said something to him later in the game, and Luke Romano was deputising as captain when Matt Todd went down injured. And I believe Nick Bryan said, hey, mate, you're not the captain. And Luke Romano said, well, I am now because he's injured. So, you know. It's an interesting part of the game, and you know, speaking to Spitoff Supremo Duncan Grieve, you know, he's talking about, you know, are we seeing a change in refereeing philosophically? Are they letting a few things go because the game is so fast, and they feel compelled to adjudicate games that allow for freedom of movement? I wonder, have you noticed anything different about the way referees are responding to certain areas of the game this year compared to last or the year before?
I don't know. I mean, I mean the referees have been, you know, scrutinized over a few big, you know, decisions. And so perhaps, you know, they are sort of, I kind of get the feeling that there's a little bit more of a personal touch. You know, they are actually talking to players. Before, they used to just name them by number 10 or number 9. Now they're actually using their names. I don't mind that. You know, they do that a little bit in the league, you know.
Oh, they do it all the time in the league.
Yeah.
It's first name basis.
Exactly. I don't mind that sort of stuff because I think, you know, you're not out there sort of dictating things as a referee. You do have to have a personal connection with the players.
Well, and you do. And people quite often accuse referees of coaching in game.
Yeah.
You know, giving players warnings. I mean, I would say this to those who don't like that. If referees didn't do that, they'd be blowing their whistle 200 times in the game.
Yeah.
Because every single breakdown, ruck and maul, is a penalty waiting to happen. Yeah. I mean, you've got to let something go and give guys a fair cop to get out of the way.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the Hurricanes. Where are they at, you think, from a headspace point of view? You know, the opening game was a shambles. They looked pretty sloppy against the Jaguares. They turned it all on against the Crusaders. Is this a team that we need to take very seriously this year and a genuine title hope, given that they've got a quality pack, real big ball runners in that pack, and the back line that, you know, they keep on putting out a great back line?
Oh, I think they are. They are definitely quality. They're finals contenders, and they proved that against the Crusaders with the pack that they've got. You know, they put the Crusaders under immense pressure on their own ball. Yeah, they were going backwards in a couple of the scrums, but they still managed to have guys like, you know, Lau Mape get them back on the front foot. And so I just think they're starting to get, you know, their game together, the balance of their game. You know, Barrett's coming into some nice form, having just played two sort of games. So, you know, they are going to be very dangerous, but, you know, against the Highlanders team, they are just going to be defensively.
Well, and this is what I was going to ask. I'm glad you brought up Lau Mape. Chris Boyd, post-match after the Hurricanes-Crusaders game, said you've got to have a bully in midfield.
Yeah.
Lau Mape's their bully. There's no doubt about that. How do the Highlanders face Lau Mape? Because he's coming straight down Channel 1 all day.
Oh, all day. But do you put, I mean, they've got some big guys on the loosies that can take care of that.
100%. You know? Do you put Luke Whitelock just standing there the whole day, say, come at
man,
me? Because Luke Whitelock is burying people on a daily basis.
They've lost, I think, you know, how long's Squire out for?
It's going to be up to 6 weeks. It's the same thumb injury, the same thumb he broke last time.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I suspect he'll need surgery this time. Last time he just let it heal of its own accord, but I assume they're going to have to get in there and operate, which is a bit of a bummer for him. So, yeah, Squire out for potentially up to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
But I don't think they'd worry too much about that. He's irreplaceable in some ways, but they've got cover there.
They have. And so I think, you know, we're talking about the inside and looking after that inside channel, but I think Lau Mape will get a little bit wider, particularly with the two, relatively inexperienced sort of centres that the Highlanders have got. If that's an area they would, that I think they'll target, it's probably that.
Well, the Highlanders have got to shut him down. And if they shut Lau Mape down and manage to get him a couple of times behind the game, does that change the whole way the Hurricanes have to approach the game?
Oh, well, it'd have to be. Now, they'll probably use the Barrett brothers a little bit more, perhaps kick to the Highlanders and then try and defend. I think that's what the balance is. That's what they're starting to get right with the influence of, you know, Bowden Barrett being able to sort of size those opportunities up and say, well, it's not really on here. Let's just get downtown. But then they're going to have to defend as well. So, yeah, well, it's going to be a massive game, mate.
It certainly is. And to wrap things up on this one, the one matchup that I think is going to be crucial is TJ Perenara, how he handles Aaron Smith. Aaron Smith, I believe, is the best player in the world right now. The way he has put in performances over the last 2 or 3 weeks, it is astounding to watch him play footy. I mean, regardless of what you think about the way he celebrates every moment in the game, The guy's VO2 must be off the charts. His fitness levels are incredible. His accuracy is unrivaled in the world. I know people would say, oh, Connor Murray's not too bad. And he's not, but he's a different player. Smith, at the moment, is just running the cutter.
Oh, big time. And doesn't he get him? I mean, he anticipates things so well, you know, the way he comes back to the blind and then all of a sudden he's in a really good support line. His passing and his ability to get from a wide ruck to the middle, then back out wide again, but still deliver an accuracy in his pass and that zing in his pass. He's probably got the best pass in the world at the moment.
Yeah, 100.
And so, and in doing that, he's challenging his forwards. He's making, he's sniping around the rucks a little bit, but he's always upbeat, you know. So I can't, like, disagree with you on that at the moment. He's just playing some great football and possibly is the best football player in the world at the moment.
So what does TJ need to do? What do we see in his game at the moment where you think, all right, well, this is where you can beat Aaron Smith in a one-on-one? Because I haven't seen TJ kick a lot this year from the box. Aaron Smith's 28s are pretty much always on point. Is it going to be a kicking duel between these two halfbacks? Is TJ going to use a bit of his size advantage over Aaron Smith and try and take him around the edge? Where do you see Perenara perhaps having a sniff at nullifying what Aaron Smith can do?
I'd like to see him just not worry about the one-on-one battle. You know, with Perenara, you know, games like this, he's easily sort of influenced. If someone niggles at him, you know, he will he'll go away from his game. I think use his forwards, you know, be a real big leader in terms of using his forwards, you know, direct them around the park, you know, get them ball running, and then little opportunities will come. You know, don't, you know, if I was him, I wouldn't sort of go in sort of thinking, you know, it's me against you know, Aaron Smith, because already he'll take the focus off off the game. And so, but that's what he's got to do. Just direct his forwards around. He's got a big forward pack. He gets those guys running. Then all of a sudden opportunities will open up, and he'll take care of those. A
couple of other games too. The Blues have the bye this week. They probably needed that. What about the Crusaders-Bulls game? The Crusaders are now on a bounce back at home. They know they cannot afford to be beaten on their home track, and really are they. Certainly not by a South African side. Are the Bulls a show here? I thought the Bulls showed glimpses of genuine quality against the Chiefs, but they just got Brady retallocked in the end. they've lost Funfudon, actually, obviously, with 3 weeks suspension for trying to decapitate Big Jim. This could be a line in the sand, this game, for the Crusaders.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I don't think, I mean, the Bulls, they showed, man, they played some good, I felt for them, in the end, because it just couldn't close that game out. I mean,
that's very magnanimous of you as a former Chief, Mills.
Oh, I mean, some of the stuff that they did was, you know, the tries that their back scored. Yeah. Now, I was thinking they were just going to go into this game and just drive the crap out of the wounded Chiefs. But they had some enterprising stuff. Pollard, you know, started to step up. He ran the cutter a bit more.
Warwick Hillant at the back was pretty good too.
Oh man, Rousseau. And so, I mean, they've got some great backs. Whether they're going to go down and win against the Crusaders, I don't think so. But they're certainly showing glimpses of what they can do.
No, well, they'll be sweating. We don't know yet whether Ryan Crotty will be back in that mix. Obviously, Jack Goodhue got a massive cut on the face as well in that Highlanders game, and Sam Whitelock. I suspect Sam Whitelock will be back. He only developed symptoms on the Thursday before the Saturday game. So hopefully he's fully recovered for that one. That one Friday night, of course. And then the Chiefs are away to the Sunnies.
Sunwolves.
That's a laydown Mazir, isn't it? Oh, God bless the Sunwolves, but no.
No.
Yeah, good chat. real good chat. I like that. That's the Kiwi point of view on Super Rugby. You're on the short ball, and we'll finish up with some sad news today, Millsy. Dylan Meeker, former All Black, former Blues player, a great supporter of secondary schools rugby and a great instigator for change within the Barbarians Club, which does a lot of good work in this country as well, passed away yesterday, day before, age of just 45. It's a tragic loss for rugby in this part of the world and his family, obviously, and I think for all fans of what Dylan Meeker brought to the game. What are your memories of Dylan and things that stand out for you?
Oh, he was a fantastic man, kind-hearted, you know, was always there sort of to have a chat. Fortunate enough to be able to play in some Auckland teams with him. So it is some very, very, very sad news. And as you say, he was very influential, particularly in the New Zealand Barbarians and also in schools rugby. So our hearts go out to his family, in particular Tracy and little Marley. So, yeah, pretty sad news, mate. He'll be missed.
He loved a good night out.
Oh, mate. I'll tell you what, they're going about double parking. You cannot drink with that man because you'll be like triple parked with jugs. And so if you don't want to drink, do not stay. You need to stay well clear of Dylan Meeker.
Oh, well, he's a massive loss. And, you know, I just think it's so tragic that these guys passing away far too early. I think of Normie Berryman and Jonah, obviously, and now Dylan. I mean, it's these guys were outsized in every way.
Oh, yeah.
And, I share your condolences for the family. It's a real shame for Dylan's family to lose such a champion man at such a young age. But on that very sad note, Millsy, we'll wrap it up for another short ball this week. Looking forward to the action all weekend long, and you can catch all the Super Rugby live on rugbypass.com. We'll see you next week.